Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Son of a Blitch podcast. I'm your host, George Blitch. Today, I had the pleasure of sitting down and speaking with Gary Robertson, who you guys may know as the host of Carnivore, the television show, does a lot of predator hunting all around. It is a phenomenal show. Highly, highly suggest you guys tune into that. He also owns and runs Burnham Brothers with his wife, Deb. It is a great, great company. It's been around for a long time. He's owned it since around 91. Make some amazing calls. You guys got to check that out. He's also the author of Eyes Front. This is an amazing book talking about his 60 years of hunting. There are some wonderful stories in there, some great pictures. Also, you guys can follow him online and see some of the amazing footage he has. He has a new collar that's coming out called the Freak. F-R-E-Q, kind of a play on frequency and the freak. Anyway, it is a wonderful, wonderful collar that I think is going to be a total game changer. The ultrasonic frequencies that it's able to produce, it's unprecedented. It is really something that has never been on the market before. It is going to be a game changer, and I can't wait to get one in my hands, try it out, and you know, show some videos there. But in the meantime, the new season of Carnivore is about to go on live, and you guys are going to be able to see the effects of this amazing caller in person as you tune into that show. Once again, I am just honored that he came on here today. He is a Texas legend in the hunting community and a wonderful gentleman, and I think you guys are really going to love this episode here. So thanks for tuning in, and without further ado, let's listen to Gary. Well, Gary, thank you so much for joining us today. How you doing, man?
Doing good, except really hot.
Yes.
I wish you'd send us a cold spell.
I know. I hope we can get that sometime soon. I don't see it in, it's already June and it's blazing hot. So I'm just worried about what July and August look forward to, but you're still getting out in the outdoors, right?
We were in New Mexico last week. It was nice in the mornings. Most mornings it was in the 40s. And it got up, of course, in the high 80s. That didn't bother me so much. We could have probably kept calling even in the 80s. But what was happening every day about 10 to 11 o'clock, the winds got up. And so we'd get up at 4:30, we'd be calling by 6 o'clock, and you could get about four really good hours. And then after that, it kind of started to come unwound because the winds just got too high. But that happens when you get big temperature swings, as you know, where it goes from 40 to 80 or 90 degrees, you're going to get some wind. And it didn't disappoint. It did blow. But we had a good hunt. Didn't call up quite as many coyotes as I wanted. But the ones that came really good. The ranch where we were hunting is a really big ranch. And since I was there in early March, some of the cowboys on the ranch were worrying about the coyote population because they'd been seeing quite a few, especially where they were calving. And so the rancher went on and they were doing a lot of night hunting and spotlighting. And since I had been there in early March, they'd killed 196 coyotes.
Wow.
So there were less ears, you know, out there. So if you have less ears, you're going to have less respondents. Like I say, we were really pleased. All the ones that heard it seemed to respond really well. So that was a good thing.
And is this you using your new call, the Ultrasonic Freak? Is that the one y'all are using out in the field?
Yes, okay. That's all we're using right now. In fact, for the last 3.5 years, that's all I've used is what we call the Freak. And it's the first and only electronic game call that will produce ultrasonic frequencies. All the first electronic calls were built back in the 50s. In fact, we started with Burnham Brothers started with those 78 speed records. I don't know if that's probably before your time, George, but it was a big old album looking thing, and they had battery powered record players, and they went to the field with those. And actually, the sound that they produced was every bit as good as anything on the market today, because all those sounds that these electronic players would produce were trying to satisfy the human ear. No one really thought about, okay, maybe we need to try to, you know, appease the predator's ears. And what are they hearing? It was in the 90s, When I first started, you know, realizing, hey, these animals are communicating and I can't hear it, there's no sound. You know, I began to realize we're really missing something here. But the technology wasn't there to build an electronic call that would produce ultrasonics. So I had to put it on the back burner. And it wasn't until 6 years ago that I found that there were speakers being built in Germany that would produce ultrasonics. Once I found that those were available, bam, I told my guys, I said, you know, stop the presses. We're not going to build just another electronic game call. We're going to build something that's totally different, that's going to change the calling world. We're going to produce the full spectrum of the sounds that those animals are producing. And so that's what we've done. And to give you an idea, when we were young, we could hear it about 20,000 hertz. That's one way you measure sound frequencies in hertz. Well, a coyote can hear to 45,000 hertz, and a cat can hear to about 65,000 hertz. Every electronic caller that's been built since the 50s peaks at 15,000 to 17,000 hertz. So I'm not saying those electronic callers won't work, because if you go into an area that's not been called before, it'll work. I mean, we've used them for years and had good success. It was those repeat trips when we saw our success really dropping off. You know, the next time, say we went into a ranch and the first day we called it, just throwing out a number, say we called up 10 coyotes. Next time you go in there, we might call up 5 or 6 coyotes. The third time we went in there, we turn on the call and the coyotes would bark at us. They were saying, hey, not only do I know that you're not real, I'm telling and warning all my buddies not to come. They're warning barking at you. So that's what we would get. And when that happens, if you're trying to call coyotes, you might as well pick up your gear and go to another location. But what we did, because, you know, I've hunted some of the same ranches for over 30 years. I had that happen to me. I couldn't use typical electronics. So when that happened, I went back to using my hand calls, especially my pet, the mini blaster. That's the one I use the most. And I could call coyotes up right where they would bark at me when I was using electronics. So I'm like, I'm hitting ultrasonic frequencies, or I'm hitting frequencies that are realistic to these animals, because they're coming again just like they always did. So I thought the real ultimate test for the freak, it's what we call the new ultrasonic caller, would be to take it in those places where they're spoiled and will not come to a typical electronic call and see what they do. We took it in. We went back in those ranches where nothing else worked, turned on that freak. By gosh, it was all new. It was all new game again. Here they came. And it's been a huge game changer since we started using this. As I told you, I said I'd never write another book, but the more I use this thing, the more fodder I get to write another book. We got it some again last week. It wasn't the first rabbit that I have ever called up. I was calling in South Texas about 8 years ago, and I was using a hand call. In fact, I was using old Black Magic that sounds kind of like a jackrabbit distress. It sounds kind of like a wreck. It sounds like something between a jackrabbit and the fallen distress. And I was calling in a little field, because as you know, South Texas, the biggest obstacle down there is trying to find a place where you do have visibility.
Right.
You know,
right.
So much brush. I blew on that call. The first time I blew on it, that jackrabbit came running to me, and she stopped about maybe 10 steps from me. And of course, when she's sitting up, I could see her underline. She was nursing, so she had little ones. And so I think what she was doing, I don't know where those little ones were. I may have been sitting close to them. At any rate, she came to me. There was no doubt about it. That was the first time I ever saw a rabbit called. But I have never seen one come to electronic call before. 3 years ago, we were up in Big Spring, Texas. I was calling with a buddy of mine, and I'd been calling with a grown cottontail distress, which I use a lot. It's a sound that I think carries really well, and especially when we're battling the wind a little bit. So, and the winds were up, it was kind of late morning. I had played a couple of series of that sound, and I didn't see a coyote or cat coming. So I decided, well, I'll switch into a baby cottontail. This was a recording that we had done, and when we put it on an oscilloscope, this baby cottontail went over 90,000 hertz. It was at a frequency we never imagined that a rabbit could produce. That's up close to what bats do, you know.
Right, right.
Now, I'm not able to replicate that with the freak. We can get up to about 50,000 hertz. But 50,000 is a great improvement over that 15,000 that everybody else is doing. At any rate, when I switched to that baby cottontail, a mama cottontail came running across a road, ranch road, and ran right up to the call and sat down about this far, and a foot or so in front of the speaker, and never left until I went down and picked up the call. Now, she didn't attack the caller, but she went straight to it and sat down right in front of it. And I'm like, you know, we're doing something we've never done before. We're making sounds that we've never done before. And that rabbit was really proof of it. And of course, we had video of it, so we aired it on Carnivore, the right. TV show. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks were just shocked that she reacted in that fashion. Well, this last week, we were in New Mexico. And right now, I don't have many jackrabbits in this country. My country out in West Texas, the populations are starting to come back a little, but still down. Yeah. Yours in South Texas, as you know, are down.
Big time.
But they're starting to come back really pretty good on this ranch we were on in Western New Mexico last week. And of course, this time of year, they have little ones. Well, I think it was three or four times I had started calling, and as soon as I turned the call on, we had jackrabbits running by the call. The call was sitting out, you know, up wide open space, because I'm trying to call that coyote out into an opening where I could kill him.
Sure.
And the first four, I think, that came just did flybys. They went by like a couple of feet from the call, but they didn't stop. They just kind of bounced, breezed by it, you know, like, okay, that obviously they were coming to the call, but they didn't have the nerve to stop. The fifth one that came up was the first call we made on Thursday morning. As soon as I turned the call on, I was playing. It's actually a cottontail recording, a young cottontail, but it's kind of a gravelly sounding cottontail. Sounds more like a jackrabbit. It looked like a torpedo. The sage was really short, and I can see this animal coming just below the sage with its ears laid back against its head and neck and running really low to the ground. It runs right to the call. And instead of just doing a flyby, no, this one starts circling it and kind of jumping. And he never jumped on the caller, but it was obvious, in my opinion, he was trying to lead something away from that sound. I think he was trying to get its attention because he made a circle, and then he took off, and then he came back, and then he took off again. Like, okay, I can't kill you, but I'll distract you, and maybe somebody will get away from you. So the cool thing again is we have it all on tape. So that'll be aired on Carnivore as well. Heck, we may do a whole show about a jackrabbit, you know. Actually, I think we have about 2.5 minutes of it or something like that. So he was just there a long time.
Wow.
But that's the kind of weird stuff we're seeing. I think one of the another thing that we had last week when we were calling is typically, like I say, when we're calling in that big open country, you kind of have to set your call out in the open. There's nothing there. And with this caller, there's no need for a decoy. You know, that's what everybody else wants with their call. They feel like you really can't make a call without some type of electronic decoy to really get their attention. This one sounds so good, you don't need that. I do like to, if I can, tuck it maybe next to a little bush or something.
Right.
But a lot of the calls we did in that country, you couldn't really hide it. So in my opinion, one of the smartest birds there is, of course, is a crow. The only thing smarter than a crow is a raven. I don't know if you've had much to do with ravens, but a raven, of course, is a bigger bird, and they're smart as heck. And to trick ravens is, you don't do it much. What we noticed, if we had the caller sitting out in the open, they would come and they'd do a flyby, kind of like the jackrabbit. But on one occasion, I was able to kind of put the caller up under a little cedar bush. And when I did, the ravens couldn't see it. You know, they couldn't see a square box sitting there. And they just hovered on it and went to squawking. I don't know how many they called in there. But they, and I wasn't playing, you know, distress, crow distress sounds to call birds. We're calling, you were using rabbit distress sound. But that raven takes advantage of that. They follow coyotes to the call all the time. Most of the time we hear a raven or see a raven coming, that gets our attention because that raven's following that coyote. He knows that that coyote's going to feed and there's going to be some scrap left over and he's going to feed. So they'll follow him in, just like red tails and Harris's hawks will in South Texas. You turn on a call down there, that's the first thing that shows up. Well, nowadays, the first thing that shows up are caracaras.
Right. Because
you've got more caracaras than anything else. But in the old days, it was Harris's hawks and red tails. And the one thing I always love about those two birds is they won't say a word until they see a predator. A Harris's hawk or a red tail won't squall or squeak, whatever you're going to make their call, until they get excited and see a predator coming. So that is, when he flies in there and he sits on a limb, he doesn't say anything. He's helping me look, but there ain't nothing coming. But if he squeals, I know he's looking at a predator. So you better get ready. Ravens are going to give you some, they're going to talk even, they'll follow a coyote in, they'll squawk when they're following him in. But if there's no coyote there and they really like the sound, they will congregate over the call like these did. And when they do, of course, they start calling. Well, you'll have other ravens come from maybe a mile away to that same location. So again, we're just seeing things that new and different all the time.
That's amazing to be getting all this on video. And as you're kind of progressing and checking all these out in different areas and what's coming to it, I was kind of curious, how did you get your start? I know, you had some mentors and you were very young, you started hunting at a very young age, but maybe you can walk us back to that. And how is it that you got caught on, in calling and the predator bug and then eventually, writing articles and then, having your show Carnivore and things like that. What was it that initially kind of got you into, that just capturing, your heart and your attention?
Well, growing up on a ranch in South Texas, hunting was pretty natural, I guess. I could go out the back door with a .22 rifle and a collie dog, or border collie is what we had in those days, before I had hounds. And she'd find all any kind of predator there was in a brush pile or whatever. It might be a skunk or a possum, ringtail coon, that was what we caught. But what was a little bit different than most folks, my dad was not a hunter. He wanted us to have that opportunity, because he thought it would help keep my brother and I off the streets of Divine, which wasn't a really big town at that time, still not. But he would rather have us out there on the ranch, walking around, stumbling around with a .22, than he would, want to go to town and visit with some buddies. He thought that would keep us out of trouble, and I think it worked. But he wasn't my mentor. I had a great uncle. My grandfather died when I was in first grade, and he had taken my brother, who was a year older than me, on his first deer hunt, and they'd killed a deer. But when I came along, it was my great uncle, my grandfather's brother, that kind of took a shine to me and took me hunting a little bit more and talked about it. you know, it was one thing for us to go out and do, but I wanted to be around people that talked about hunting, you know, told the hunting stories, and that's what he did. You know, he hunted Colorado and in the hill country in those days. That's kind of where we had to go to hunt because, you know, in the 50s, there weren't many deer in South Texas. Until we eradicated the screw worm, we didn't have many deer, as you know. And
yep.
It wasn't until really in the 70s we started seeing the populations really come on and get where they are. In fact, we've got too many now, but that's just a sign of the time. But what really got me into the predator calling game was laziness. My brother, who was a year older than I was, he wanted to be a, you know, trap some of the predators on the ranch, and he wanted to be a trapper. So he was getting, you know, ordering Fur Fishing Game magazine. I was subscribed to that. And then he was getting some of these trapping supply catalogs. And then he had a herder's catalog. And of course I decided, well, I'll go tag along and see what this trapping game was all about. And, the old county trapper there was D. Burris. And in fact, he'd come down to the ranch and tried to teach us a little about trapping. But man, it didn't take long for me to figure out that if I did a good enough job setting a trap that a coyote might put his foot in it, that took me at least 30 minutes. It was work, and it was so meticulous. I told my brother, there's got to be a better way. So I started reading, you know, the articles in Outdoor Life, Fur Fishing Game, and Sports Field. And nearly every time you picked up a magazine, there was an article in there about the Burnham brothers. They were taking Roy Rogers hunting and were shooting on 16 millimeter film and showing, calling up critters. And they'd gone to Africa and called up all kind of critters using their hand calls. And I said, you know, I'm going to try that. That looks like something I might like to do. Well, it was kind of crazy. You know, they were my heroes. And of course, they had Burnham Brothers game calls. Ironically, the first game call I purchased was one from the herders catalog. The predator call in the herders catalog, I think, was $3 at that time. The C3 Fox call that Burnham Brothers sold was like $3.50. Well, I was talking to my dad, and he said, son, you might as well save yourself 50 cents and get that herders call, because there's nothing to that predator calling. I mean, you're not going to go out there and make a racket and get anything to come to you. That's, if you want to kill something hunting, you got to be quiet and sit still. Okay, well, I went on and ordered the call anyway. And the rest was kind of history after that. I practiced all day after it came in the mail. And first time I take it out that evening, that night, you know, we thought most everybody that we talked to or I had talked to in that area, they were just nighttime calling, just using a spotlight or flashlights or whatever. And so that's what we did. I practiced all day blowing the call. My mother hated it. The dogs loved it. She put me out of the house, wouldn't let me practice indoors, which was probably a good idea. But the first time we went out with a predator call, we went down behind what we call the big tank and climbed up on the tank dam. And you could see the brush was kind of scattered off the backside, but we had some elevation there. And both of us, my brother and I, had those little Rayovac two-cell flashlights, and he had a single shot 22, and I went to squawking on that call and making what I thought was a good sound, and I blew on it till I was about to pass out, and I stopped to get a breath of air, and I kind of heard something rustling and turned on my flashlight. Here was a gray fox about 15 steps from us. Well, I'd never seen a fox on that ranch before. I'd seen coyotes, I'd seen bobcat, but I'd never seen a fox. And of course, you don't have many fox where you have coyotes, because the coyotes will eat them. But anyway, here was a fox. So I think Russell did take a shot at it. We didn't connect, but from that moment on, calling was magic to me. That was the only call we made. I think we had driven an old 641 Workmaster tractor down to the tank, and of course walked in to make the call. And so we jumped back on the tractor and went back to the house, because I was 10 years old. My brother was 11. So my dad had let us drive a tractor, but not a pickup truck. So went back home and of course was telling them all the news about how great it worked. And like I say, from that day on, it was magic.
Hey, everybody. Just wanted to take a moment to tell you about Sharing the Land. For those unfamiliar, Sharing the Land is an initiative that was brought together by Doug Duren to bring land access seekers and landowners together to form these unions to be able to better benefit the property. Very conservational-minded, but it's also about getting people out there and sharing these experiences out on these properties and having them work in a more uniformed way to better benefit the property and the habitat. My company, Map My Ranch, which I work with Colin Williams, we make maps for people's properties all around the country, right? And one of the things that we do to be a part of this organization is we offer to make maps for the landowners. So if you sign up as a landowner, we're going to go ahead and put together a map for you, which shows your property, your boundary, and maybe any of the things that you want to have labeled. Maybe it's certain overlooks, or maybe it's certain, fencing areas where you're going to have this type of, agricultural work done, or maybe you're going ahead and growing this, maybe these are some native seeds that you're focusing on. Whatever it is that you want to go ahead and have mapped, we're going to do that for you. That's a part of our contribution. We are a very proud sponsor of Sharing the Land, and will be for a long time. Love working with Doug. Wonderful, wonderful man. And this is a wonderful project. I highly suggest you guys go check it out. And there's a whole team of sponsors and partners that are a part of this that are just top notch. Go check out sharingtheland.com, and also go check out DougDuren.com to learn more about all the wonderful things he's doing. Well, you eventually ended up buying Burnham Brothers, the company, and now you're making your callers from there. How did that transition go from, here you are learning and working with these guys and kind of, having these older gentlemen be, kind of these, this inspiration to you. And then how did that go to where you decided, I know you had a different kind of timeline with your work and you were kind of, in a different field, but how did that come to be where you now own that and run that company?
Well, when I got out of college, in 1975, graduated at what was Southwest Texas State. Now they call it Texas State. Mm-hmm. I went to work for the Federal Land Bank making farm and ranch loans because, seemed like a pretty good direction to go. My brother graduated a year before me, well, actually 6 months, but he went back to the ranch and there wasn't enough there for both of us to make a living. Deb and I got married about 6 months less than that after I graduated and we went to work. She went to teaching school and I went to work for the Federal Land Bank making farm and ranch loans up in the Waco area. And then, at that time, when I would drive home from Gatesville back to South Texas, I'd go through Marble Falls, and that's where I met Burry Burnham. And at that time, Elba Winston as well. But, I would always stop by there and talk because I was still predator calling and they always had good stories. So, worked in the banking business, went from there to Stephenville and ran that office up there and then moved to my stint in East Texas over around Madison at Madisonville. And then, ran that office for a couple of years and, anyway, ended up in commercial banking there. And I wanted to get back to South Texas or Hill Country or West Texas, back in the ranching country. And Menard National Bank was owned by a fellow that I had known or met. And he got in touch with me and wanted me to come out and run this bank for him. That was in December of 1985. And I moved to Menard, Texas. And while I was here at the bank, of course, I still see Murray Burnham from time to time and see him at some of the hunting shows. And anyway, we knew each other. And so I invited him to come out. He wanted to come out and do a little calling around here. And then, of course, at that time, I was hunting a ranch way out in the Trans-Pecos below Marathon. And so he wanted to go call out there. So we made some trips together, some up in the Panhandle, and hunted together for a while. And then he decided, you know, it was time for him to sell the business. And that was in August of 91, Deb and I bought Burnham Brothers from Murray Burnham. And it didn't take me long to realize I couldn't run Menard National Bank and do Burnham Brothers any justice. And I decided I'd rather chase four-legged coyotes than two-legged ones. So here we are. We still have Burnham Brothers, and we've kind of, you know, expanded it to the freak. We're going to start it. We had to bring in some partners to develop this call because it's been a big project. We've been working on this project for 5 years now, right. And it has cost us a lot of money, but we're about to put it on the market. And so, most everything will still be marketed under Burnham Brothers, but we do call the new call the Freak, F-R-E-Q. And that's because of, you know, it is kind of a freak because it's the only one of a kind, but it also plays on frequency.
Sure.
So F-R-E-Q,
Freak. That's a great name.
Well, thank you. Folks don't realize how much trouble is this day and time to trademark anything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everything's taken,
yeah.
You know, and then we were first going to use the term, call it the Rogue, but another company that wasn't even in our same category protested us using that. So I said, rather than battle them in court, we could have won easily, but it was going to cost me about $80,000. I said, let's just come with a new name. And actually, yeah. I like Freak better.
Oh, it's a great one. I love the double play there, too. And it's obviously something it's unprecedented in what it is and its ability. And so it works so well, man. I'm glad someone else had Rogue.
There we go. Thank you. That's what I told my guys. I said, and that's the way it's been. We had one partner that was really did not like that name Freak, for strange reasons. But anyway, I have been, you know, going across the country. We still do the trophy hunter shows and then do the NRA convention for Ruger. And people are, you know, just tell me how they love that name. I don't know one person other than one partner that does not love that name. I think it's perfect.
No, it works well. And so when I was just kind of curious, we can go back to like when you first bought Burnham Brothers, you're starting to do some work there at that time, as far as, you know, getting into video and, you know, you're obviously you're a contributing writer to multiple magazines, Texas Trophy Hunter being one. You know, I know some of the articles I've written have been, you know, every time I go to look at it for mine and in there, I'm like, oh, there's yours. And, you know, every 2 months it arrives, there's always a good article that you've written there too, as well as, you know, Jim Heffelfinger and, you know, some other folks there as well. And, I was just kind of curious when that kind of started out as far as, you know, taking that next level from, okay, now you have Burnham Brothers, it's under your belt, you're running that. And then now you're doing, you know, the videos and kind of, you know, I guess the predecessor to, the Carnivore show which is on, you know, Pursuit Channel, and everyone should definitely go check it out. Wonderful show. But yeah, just kind of curious about that and how that kind of evolution took place there for you, personally as well.
We got into the video business, because Murray had been doing a little bit. He had done three or four videos. He did one on calling coyotes. He did one on calling fox, one on calling bobcats, and one on calling turkeys that I'm not sure. Yeah, I guess he finally hit the market with that. But right after we bought Burnham Brothers, we came out with calling all varmints. And it was had a little bit of everything on it. It had some nighttime stuff. We were calling coyotes, we were calling cats, we were calling coons, calling fox. But really what made us, I think, take off in the video world was in about 1995 or six, I guess I'll back up a step. I went on Mossy Oaks, what they call their elite pro staff, in 1992. And at that time, Mossy Oak was doing all these how-to videos. They were doing one on turkeys. Then they did one on whistling. They call it Whistling Wing Series. And it was on waterfowl. They did one on deer. Of course, I think Realtree at that time was doing one on deer. They call monster bucks or whatever. But each one, those camo companies were coming with a title every year in a different subject. Of course, like I say, Mossy Oak loved the turkey deal, and that's what they really put their money behind. And after a couple of years of watching that, I went to Ronnie Strickland, cuz, mm-hmm. Who's a dear friend of mine. I said, cuz, the timing is right to do a predator calling video. And he said, Gary, he said, I don't know. He said, number one, I don't think we'll ever get enough video together to put an hour-long project on the market. I said, I'll tell you what, at that time I was doing a lot of work with Winchester Ammo, and we had a hunt scheduled. We call it the Texas Shootout. We had it every year headquartered there at Tilden on La Paloma with Leo Cantanilla's ranch. And so we would go down there and we'd bring in outdoor riders. It was a kind of a co-op hunt. Winchester would furnish the ammunition, a gun company. It might be Winchester, Browning, or Savage, or whoever. We changed off from time to time.
Right.
They would furnish the firearms. Somebody would furnish the optics, whether it was Pentax of that day or Nikon or Leupold, whoever. And then we furnished the calls, and Mossy Oak furnished the camo, and we would split up the cost. We'd bring in like five or six top riders for all the big three magazines. So anything that might've happened on that hunt got a lot of really good exposure. And so I told Cuz, I said, send a cameraman when we do the Texas Shootout this year. We hunted for, I think, 2 days. We made 18 calls. I had coyotes or bobcats on 16 of those 18 calls. We had all the footage we needed to do a how-to video, the first one. So I carried. I got in touch with Cuz after the cameraman had been home for about a week. I said, all right, Cuz, did you get enough footage to put together a how-to video? Yeah, he said, we did, but who's going to buy this thing? I said, you're going to be shocked who buys this. I said, right now, predator hunting is on the rise. It's starting to grow. And sure enough, we finished that project. All we had to do was some cutaways, and I had to do some voiceovers and a little bit of more how-to stuff. But anyway, sure. We finished the project. It was a little over an hour long. That very first predator calling video we did for Mossy Oak outsold every other title they had that year. The second year, after that, Cuz came to me and said, all right, that was so successful. You got to do another one. So we did five in a row for Mossy Oak. And that, in my opinion, did more to grow predator hunting across the U.S. than anything else. Because predator hunting had always been fairly popular in Texas and across the Southwest. And that's, back in the early days, I thought all the hunters were in Texas. Most of the hunters were here. Well, I found out after I got out in this world, there's more hunters in the South than there are in Texas. Every redneck over there is a hunter. He hunts turkeys, he hunts deer. And now if he knows anything about predators, he thinks he's a predator hunter as well. So that's what we did. We brought in a whole new audience. And when we did, it also, as those videos got out, people in the Northeast were buying them. And it started opening up a whole new market where they'd never called before, was in the Northeast. So now we have people calling up there. So that, in my opinion, is what really caused predator hunting to take off, was those five how-tos that we did. After we did five, I told the guys, I said, look, video sales were, at that time, they had gone to DVDs. I said, they were beginning to slow down because there was so much TV programming.
Right.
you know, people were like, well, I don't need to buy a video. I can just turn on the TV and watch this. After we quit doing the videos for Mossy Oak, they still sponsored us, as well as Nikon and Savage and a few other companies. We did a how-to video that was all on daytime bobcat calling. It, you may remember it. It was called Catastrophic.
Yep.
We sold 17,000 copies of that DVD. It was the largest selling predator calling video ever. And after that, we were finished with doing a how-to project. We were approached by Mossy Oak. They said, look, you need to go to TV. You know, the DVD sales are slowing down because there's so much TV program. And at that time, of course, we were backed by Mossy Oak, Savage Arms, who I had gone to earlier and convinced them to build a rifle specific for the predator calling game.
And that was the Model 10?
The Model Predator? 10 Predator.
Yeah.
And which was very popular and a huge seller for them. Anyway, so they approached us. They were wanting us to do TV as well as Nikon. So we had Mossy Oak, Nikon, and Savage all pushing us to do TV. And all we needed to do then was add an ammo company, which I think the first year or two, Winchester was our ammo company. And then we moved over to Hornady, which is a great, great company. We love dealing with Hornady. Savage, it sold out to a different company, holding company. We had a chance to move to Ruger. Ruger was my pet anyway, so it was a natural move. So Ruger's our huge title sponsor. Hornady's our ammo sponsor. And then we were very fortunate to go with Trigicon as our optic sponsor. Trigicon is products are probably the most rugged in the field, very innovative, American owned, and just super people. So we were blessed to, you know, we fell out of the nest with some of our sponsors, and, you know, instead of going down, we were able to go up, and in my opinion, and they've been our sponsors for a number of years, and hopefully I don't know how much longer they're going to want to sponsor a 70-year-old man. But, you know, here we are. So it's been fun. And I said last year that I wasn't going to do video or any TV this year, but here we are. We're going to have season 13. And I don't know. Now that it's easier that we're using the Freak, you know, I'm not going to say there won't be season 14. So here we go again, I guess.
Wow, man. Well, congrats to all the success with that. And I mean, those partners are amazing companies, great people. I've worked with a lot of those. I use Hornaday with all my reloading equipment. I mean, they're phenomenal. And, you know, obviously, I like it. You said, like, fell out of the nest and you fell up. There's some good folks there, too. And I wanted to bring it back to, you know, when Nikon was still producing optics, you also helped produce a special one with them, the Coyote. Because I remember the very first time I saw that, I was like, oh, this is game changer. And if you can kind of talk about that, I used that for years. And, you know, I've since moved on to, I've sold that to a friend and he uses it now too, but, it was a wonderful optic. And if you can maybe talk about the development of that and, you know, kind of the reticle and what the use of was, you know, as far as separating it from all the other that were out there at that time.
Yeah, we were blessed to get with Nikon and of course I've had great friends there, and they wanted me to kind of help them to develop we had a rifle specific for the game. They wanted to develop an optic specific for the calling game. And the key, I think, to make a really good optic for predator calling, the secret is quick target acquisition. And we came up along with them and it may go back to the old peep sight. You had a open reticle. Basically you had your crosshairs, but in the very center, instead of having a dot or whatever, it was an open, just open circle. But we found that the eye, when you look through that scope, your eye will go automatically. naturally goes to the center of that circle.
Yeah.
And it helped gain target really quick. So that's what I tell guys, you know, everybody wants to know how to be a better predator hunter. The only way to be a better predator hunter is, I mean, I can give you all the basics, but it's just to be out there, to be exposed to situation after situation on how to handle, you know, a coyote that's coming harder, or how to handle, you know, a cat doing this or that. But the main thing a guy needs to know, and the only way to gain that is from experience, is to know when that moment of truth is about to happen, to know when you're going to be able to take that shot. There's always a real critical time there. If you don't get that shot made when it presents itself, after that, it seems your chances of killing that predator go downhill dramatically and rapidly. So that target acquisition, knowing about when it's going to happen and getting on target quick, that's the secret to the calling game, or to calling and killing game. You right. can call them up and watch them. But if you really want to kill them, that knowing that when that moment of truth is going to present itself and getting on target, taking the shot accurately, or what gets it done.
Well, and you kind of talked earlier about some of the things you look for when there were certain types of hawks, and you know, the ravens are the different types of birds that come in that are kind of these cues. You know, a lot of times if you're, you know, the more time you spend out in the woods, the more you're going to learn and gain from the experience, right? Like, I mean, even if you're hunting hogs or deer or whatever, you know, and all of a sudden you're kind of, you know, looking out and you see a bunch of birds that are flying off and squawking or whatever from a particular area, pay attention to that area. Something may be coming out, whatever it may be. You don't know what it is yet, but something is moving. Something has affected, you know, and that kind of ripple effect of the wildlife. And so I was kind of curious if there was maybe some, you know, tips or some things that you might give, you know, a new predator hunter. You know, for myself, I've done some, but I haven't done a lot of calling. So that's something that I want to get into more. And obviously, you know, put me down for one of the orders for the freaks. But as far as, like, you know, as the beginning things, it's like, let's say someone's like, I really want to get into that. What are some of your suggestions? Some maybe, you know, things that you think are important for that beginner 101, you know, maybe some of our listeners want to get into this and they want to learn more about that. You know, can you give us some advice and some, you know, sage wisdom from years of doing this?
Well, once you start, you know, on that, I could probably go from now to dark, but anyway, I tell guys, you know, in South Texas, I don't worry about it so much because I feel like every time I sit down, there's a critter within hearing. You know, there's just that many in the brush country.
Right.
But let's face it, you can call to an area where there aren't any predators. And that's what I experienced out in New Mexico. So, you know, especially where they killed 196 coyotes. I don't make a call until I start seeing a fresh sign. In other words, track or scat. Because you may drive 2 miles before you hit that. And there's no need in calling if there's not sign present, unless it's just one of those situations, this call's too good, I got to make it. But I like to call where I have sign. And if I generally call, of course, from a pickup or a hunt buggy or something. And so your vehicle's going to be making noise. I like to hunt into the wind. I want, especially in that open country. In South Texas, they kind of hear vehicle noise, all the oil field traffic and all that. They're a little, it doesn't bother them as much. But like sure. Where I was last week, man alive, it really hurt us. It was really dead calm nearly every morning. Well, those coyotes have been shot at from the trucks. They know where they hear that truck 2 miles away and they know where it is. So when you stop the truck, you got to walk away from it. Because they're like, oh, I heard it stop right there and it hadn't moved. They're already clued in. They're like, say, if you don't respect this animal, you're never going to be good at the game. So you got to walk away from that sound. And also, I think the time, having that time between when the truck stopped and you were starting to make a call also helps if that's a little extended.
Sure. But
call in, work into the wind. And if you can, you got to have the sun at your back. If you've, especially again, open country, you're lit up. If you're calling into the sun, he's got every advantage on you visually. But if I've got a sun at a low angle behind me, I can sit out nearly naked on the side of a hill. Now, when I say naked, I mean I've got clothes on, but I mean cover around me. But that sun at a low angle, I've got him blinded.
Right.
And so use that sun, use that wind. I don't have to call directly into the wind. In fact, I tend to like a crosswind better than I like calling straight into it. And the reason I like the crosswind better is because that tells me how the coyote's going to approach the call. He's always going to go downwind to the source of the sound. If I'm blowing the call and the wind's blowing from left to right, I'm going to be ready to shoot over here to my right because that's where he's coming. If I've got that caller out there and the wind is blowing from left to right, I'm set up to shoot at the right-hand side of the call. If the wind switches and goes the other way, I'm changing. I'm going to be ready to shoot over there. But that gives you a little advantage. Now, a cat, he doesn't care which way the wind's blowing. He's going to go where he has visibility, where he thinks he can get as close to that source of the sound without being detected. And that means him sneaking in. He'll use every bit of cover he can to get as close to the sound without stepping out in the open. So coyotes and cats respond differently. A lot of people say, well, you're trying to call a cat, but, you know, you're set up with the wind behind you. Yeah, that's okay. As long as I got the sun behind me, he's not going to see me. And that cat, I've had cats within 10 steps of me, a light breeze blowing in their face, and they would eventually smell me, but it didn't happen real quick. It would be, they'd pick their head up and sniff for a few seconds before they would spook off. So I don't worry on a bobcat. I don't really worry about the wind. I worry about being concealed and I don't want to make sudden movement. Coyotes, again, you can't get away with movement, but you know, if you can sit back in the shade or shadows or against, you know, something to break up your outline, like say, try to use the sun, but you've got to have the wind either in your face or crosswind. If you're calling with that wind to your back, that coyote, instead of going straight to that sound, he's going to go downwind of it, pick up your scent, and you may see him, you may not.
Right.
Another thing a lot of guys don't think about, like when we're using electronics, when we walk that call out there, we're laying a scent trail.
Sure.
So if I'm walking out there, say 30 or 40 yards, and the wind's breeze is back in my face, which it may be, that coyote's going to try to come between me and the call. I've got to kill him or stop him or kill him before he gets to my scent trail. Just be cognizant of where you've been, where that scent's going. I will say that I'm using some stuff now that years ago I used pure skunk scent. And I would never open it. It was skunk pee right out of a skunk. And I had it in a little 1 ounce bottle. I never poured any out. I just take the lid off and set it downwind. Nowadays, I'm using a product that's made right there close to Houston. It's called Predator's Death Grip. And it's kind of like that skunk. It stinks so bad, I think it helps cover my scent. Well, we better hope I don't stink worse than this stuff. All it is from what I understand, is coyote urine, bobcat urine, fox urine, and then some glands in it as well. But it sure stinks. And I'm using that to mask my scent.
Right.
And it seems to be working. It worked on one call last week, without a doubt. We were calling into a crosswind. Wind was going from left to right. As soon as I turned the call on, here came one of those flyby jackrabbits. And then I hear a raven coming from this way. I told Steve, get ready. Sure enough, coyote falls out. And the scent was blowing from the call right to where that coyote came. But I'd sprayed that stuff from the call all the way back to where we set out. And I think it confused him long enough. We got the coyote killed. So that's all that matters.
Wow. No, those are great, great tips and things, man. If someone is coming to, you know, like, I mean, obviously when the freak is out, the folks may be, you know, more prone to get something like that. But let's say if someone wants to go to Burnham Brothers and start off with getting some calls, What is it that you're suggesting maybe, you know, is a good start for them to kind of get, you know, get into the game?
We started making a call about 20 years ago that I called a mini blaster. It's just a small call that we, it has the same metal reed in it as most of the old predator calls, like the old Herder's call I had, like the old Burnham Brothers Fox C3 Fox call or long range predator call. But in the change we made, I put it in a wooden bell because I like the sound. Wood has a richer sound to me.
Uh-huh.
And I put it in, encase it in a plastic tubing so that you can bite down on that reed and change the pitch. And that call has been just a killer for us. It just works when nothing else does. That's the call that I would recommend to anyone. And it's a call that I tell folks, just take that call and put it in your mouth. And as you're going down the road, because your wife's not going to like it if you practice at the house, but just go, you know, practice making various sounds on it. You'll learn to use your teeth pressure, your lip pressure to change pitches on it. And I think that's really one of the secrets, is you can make such a wide variety of sounds on it.
That's great, man. Well, I'll put all the links for everyone to go and check out, you know, your catalog of what you have there available. I kind of wanted to end with a couple other questions. One being, what are some of the craziest things and experience you've called in? I know that recently you had that mountain lion in New Mexico. Can you maybe walk us through that? And if there's any other fun, quick stories you can throw out with some surprise things that you might have, you know, come up when y'all are video and or just out on your own hunting.
Oh, gosh, I've called up cows. I've called up horses. I've called up a rancher or two that, I was hunting the ranch I was supposed to be hunting. I wasn't trespassing, but the foreman had us in there, and the ranch owner was way over at a house, but he heard this squawking, and of course, they thought there was somebody getting beat over. And drove down and wanted to know who we were beating on. But, you know, that had happened not only to me, but a guy in Oklahoma. And I think it made Johnny Carson. He was blowing on the old Black Magic call behind a subdivision. And two little old ladies came out to their yard fences and saw him in the field. And he heard him talking. So he said, "I'm trying to call coyotes." Well, they didn't understand, so they went and called the police. They and described his vehicle and all this stuff. Well, so he's going down the road after they ruined his call, his stand for him, and he hears on the radio that they're looking for a guy that matches his description. He says, "I bet those little ladies called me in." Sure enough, they did, and that made Field and Stream, and I think Johnny Carson show. So I haven't had any that made. That went that big, but I've called up just about everything else. Called up hogs, wild hogs fairly often. Javelina come well. Mm-hmm. Had a javelina nearly eat the freak the other day at Big Spring. I had to turn the call off, and I've got bit footage of that too. And she just chomping on it, just wanting to just destroy it. called up elk. Calling coyotes, called up a lot of whitetail, a lot of mule deer. But gosh, I guess that's about it.
And then you had that experience with the mountain lion in the middle of the day, was it not?
Yes, that we called her up, I'm guessing about 8 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And she was there for over 5 minutes. So wow. It wasn't an accident. Now we had about two and a half minutes of really good footage of her. She sat down before she left where Steve couldn't see her, but we do have video of her when she walked out from behind the bush. But she just sat down. She didn't want to leave.
That is amazing.
Of all the, I have never seen daytime footage of a wild lion like that in my life. I don't think anybody's ever done that before. A lot of several people have seen little clips of the video, and all of them, and they're all predator hunters, And all of them agree there's never been anything like this. So we just got lucky. We sat down at the right place, the right time, and made the right racket.
Oh, man. There's so many amazing things that happen. I mean, I think, what do they say? The story, if it didn't happen on camera, you can't talk about it as far as like for a TV show, but you're having like all these experiences, you can show people, hey, this, it does happen. This can happen. And it sounds like with the frequency ability of the freak, of being able to really get out there in that ultrasonic and being able to, you know, call, you know, that vast amount of, you know, area, space, and the ears of these animals, you're going to be starting to see more and more things that, you know, for some people would be like, that's unbelievable, you know, but it's just that it's a game changer. And so I'm excited to see as that goes out and as people are filming their own hunts and all the things that get sent back to you that you can share there too. Cause I'm sure there's going to be some amazing footage. I mean, I know you're getting your own, but I can just, as that exponentially grows, as more people are ordering those. And speaking of ordering those, where can people learn more about your calls and kind of follow you and what you're doing?
Well, just go to burnhambrothers.com. Of course, we have websites, Burnham Brothers, and we're going to be cranking up a new website just probably to do when we do more specialized marketing with the freak. But since I don't quite have it on the market, I hope to have it out within a month or so. We'll let people know where that is, but they'll be able to pick it all up on Burnham Brothers.
Sure.
One other thing I think it's really key to mention is, when we started out, with this ultrasonic stuff, I thought, okay, all we need is ultrasonic speakers. That's not the case. All of these sounds have to be recorded ultrasonically, or they cannot go ultrasonic. So that was the first thing we had to do, was get an ultrasonic recorder. And those don't grow on bushes. I think they're a little more readily available now, but 6 years ago, that was kind of a big deal to get one. So anyway, we're in the process of re-recording all of our sounds. Two weeks ago, I had borrowed a Bobcat kit to let you know the difficulties that we encounter. One of the sounds I really wanted is a sound of a Bobcat chirping. Because that's what lions do. That's what bobcats do. When they call, they don't really meow. They do more of a chirp. And I kept this kitten for a couple of days before he got to talking, and I had to let him bond with our dachshund. And thank goodness she did. And they got where they were the best buddies. They played, and he followed her everywhere, and whatever she did, he did. In fact, I think Deb's got a photo of him. She was looking out the back window, and he needed to be taller, so he's standing on her back looking out. That's how buddies they got to be. Anyway, I couldn't get him to do any chirping. Finally, Deb said, well, let's separate them. And at a time when they really wanted to play, well, sure enough, she took the dachshund. She locked me and Robert, I called him, in the kitchen. And that kitten got to chirping like you would not believe. You would not believe a cat could make those sounds. So I'm real anxious. I know that it'll work on cats, bobcat, but I've heard lions chirp, and I don't think there's much difference in the sounds they make. So I'm hoping that we're going to have another really good ultrasonic sounds for these cats, a real specialty sound. And I'm very anxious to get it in South Texas and see how it works on bobcats.
Wow. Well, that was another question that I was going to ask you, as far as how are you getting all these recordings? Obviously this one, you've gotten your own there too. And, you know, what it took to get that is a fun story in and of itself. But as far as some of these other animals and the distress, or, you know, these cries of the babies and these things that are going on as far as this wildlife, how are you getting all of these to produce? And then also on like the freak, how many sounds do you have on there and variations thereof? And, I guess kind of a follow-up question too, is like, is there more that you can load up as you kind of go on?
We'll sell it with over 200 sounds. It'll have over 100 ultrasonic sounds. probably about 130 right now. And then it's going to have some of the old pet sounds that Burnham Brothers had. People still like to use those. So they'll be on there as well. But you'll be able to download sounds as new ones come available. Like, hey, say we get a recording of a mountain lion calling or something that's new and different. We'll have that available online. And another thing that really was a shocker to me was, okay, I thought, to show you how difficult this process has been, I thought all we needed was an ultrasonic speaker, because that's what I want to do, reproduce ultrasonic sounds. Well, we found out that the ultrasonic speaker does really well at frequencies at above 15,000 hertz, but it doesn't do well with the low-end frequencies. And that's all that I can hear. At my age, I don't hear above 10,000. So if we don't have a low-end frequency speaker, I don't even know if the call's playing, but I can hear the low-end sound. And actually, that has made, I think, the Freak even a better call, because now we can go as low as 200 hertz with this specially built speaker to handle the low-end frequency. And actually, we joke, that's the speaker that sells the rednecks, because that's what all of us hear. And it sounds so good because we've got a speaker specially built just to handle low-end frequency. So that this system has two speakers, the low-end frequency speaker and the ultrasonic speaker. And then they have to be programmed to work in unison. So that's way above my pay grade.
Well, and that's why it takes a long time to develop something like this that is unprecedented, you know. So that for those who, you know, because I know of, as on the Texas Hunting Forum, and a lot of folks, you've talked about this over time, and you know, it takes time to develop these things that have not been done before. So I can't wait for it to come out and you know, try it out in person, and I'll definitely do some, you know, filming and stuff too, as I am, and you know, send it off to you to kind of show you what I'm seeing, and I can't wait to hear more about everyone's, you know, reactions and what they're seeing and taking out there in the field, man. It's gonna be great.
I really think, Parker, that I've been in this business since the early 90s, but without a doubt, this is the greatest innovation in predator calling since the 1950s. And you can make a pretty strong argument it's one of the biggest hunting innovations in the same period of time. I don't know, unless you'd say the new night vision stuff is, you know, is right up there with it. Of course, that's not legal in some states, you know.
Right, right.
It's legal in Texas, as everybody tells me. Everything is legal in Texas.
Sure.
But anyway, it is a huge game changer. And I can't wait to get it out there. Of course, all I've seen is money go out. I haven't seen any come back. We're about ready for return on investment. But more than that, I want to hear and see what other people are finding out.
Yeah.
Well, what they're seeing in the field.
Sure, sure. And it's neat that you've seen such an evolution of, you know, predator calls. And obviously, you know, the days of VHS, then to DVD, and then you've got your different calls. And then, you know, you're now, you know, having this revolutionary game changer there too. And I think it's just so much fun to be able to kind of, you know, you've been able to see that whole spectrum of change. And it'll be so cool to see everyone kind of giving you that feedback once that's in their hands. So I'm excited for you for that. That must be fun.
All righty.
Well, look, Gary, thank you so much again for joining us today. I want to encourage everyone to go check it out. Eyes Front, your book that you have, which is a phenomenal read. You can get it on Burnham Brothers website. Go check them out on Carnivore. You know, we can follow you online too. I know Burnham Brothers has an IG account there too. I'll make sure to put all the links in here. And yeah, thank you so much for joining today. It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor of mine to have you on here.
Thank you so much, George. Thanks for putting up with
anytime. And if you have anything else that you ever want to promote, you want to come on here and tell our listeners what you got, you know, feel free, even if it's a little quick 10-15 minute chat, I'd love to have you on. So we'll definitely stay in touch here.
Well, if we come in the line and get footage like we did, I'll get back with you.
Sounds like a plan. Sounds like a plan. Well, thanks again, Gary. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Oh boy, I'm excited. I just got this tripod in the mail from Spartan Precision Equipment. This is their Sentinel tripod, which is so light, I forgot that I was even holding it. This thing is amazing. These carbon fiber legs, super light. It's got, you know, one of their classic adapters here on the top here. This is what you'll see on the Davris Pro head as well. This is their, you know, the head is, you can kind of check it out now. This will go with all the bottoms of all the optics and, you know, the adapters that are bottom of the stocks on your rifles. I know I'm going to be using this for multiple different, you know, functions. I'm going to take this in the field with me. Let's say I see a hog. Man, I'm putting the, you know, the adapter, it's on the bottom of my stock on my rifle, and I'm taking a shot, and I'm going to go ahead and get some bacon in the freezer for the family. Also, if I'm out there and I see something cool, some neat hawks or, you know, some white-tailed deer running around and everything, I'm going to go ahead and grab my camera, which has an adapter on the bottom for their heavy-duty adapters. And I'm going to throw it on here, and I'm going to get a real steady, awesome, clear shot on video and for photography. As well, if I'm out glassing somewhere and I need something steady that's lightweight to take in the field with me, I'm taking this. I can be using it for my spotting scope or for my binoculars. Look, whatever you need, Spartan Precision Equipment has exactly the thing for you for out in the field. Go to HavilandBipod.com and check out their awesome line of products. I really, really think that you're going to enjoy it. I know I will. So yes, the Sentinel tripod. Thank you so much, Spartan, for sending this. I can't wait to be using this on future hunts, filming for the upcoming TV show. Wait, upcoming TV show? Spoiler alert, BDT Cooks this fall. Stay tuned. Me and Matthew Mitchell, we got some things coming your way. Hunting and cooking. Wild game at its best.